All right, welcome back, everybody, to your favorite new podcast, Flick Fix. I'm your host, Leonard Cox, and on this podcast, I bring you essential movie summaries packed with all the key plot points, character insights, cinematic details, and big moments. This is where you get the full story in a quick, easy format, so you can stay in the loop with all the movie talk between your friends and family.
He summarizes his movies so that way you don't have to go pay for them or go to the movies, and you can just listen to them in your car with your downtime. Flick.
Oh boy, let's dive into today's movie, because woo, it's a doozy. Today we are going to be talking about Split, the psychological horror directed by M. Night Shyamalan. Whew, crazy. And as always, I'll read the IMDb description summary of the movie. Three girls are kidnapped by a man with a diagnosed 23 distinct personalities. They must try to escape before the apparent emergence of a frightful new 24th. There we go. And I'll tell you what, recommended, do not watch this movie at night, and my lights are on in the studio this time because, wow, I am on the edge of my seat. Alrighty, so let's get started here. We start with a nice scene where we have a very alone main character. Our main character, Casey. Casey is our main character. Just so you know, we'll have three main female characters as well as one main male character, and then a therapist, Dr. Fletcher. So we get introduced to our main character, Casey. We learn quickly that she's kind of an outsider. She gets detention at school. She doesn't really have a parent guardian that we can tell. And she's a loner. She's invited to these girls' birthday party. She's invited to these girls' party, essentially. It's a pity invite because she invite the main party lady here. Her name is Claire. She invites everybody, and she needed to do a pity invite to Casey. So we have Casey, Claire, and Maisha all together getting a ride home from their dad from the party because the dad is a nice guy, and he's offering to give Casey ride home instead of an Uber. They all get in the car, and Casey sits in the front seat, and then Maisha and Claire sit in the back seat, and they're on their phones doing everything, you know, teenage girls would be doing, and Casey, our main character in the front, is essentially just doing nothing, staring out the window, and she notices in the rearview mirror, as the dad's putting away the groceries, that one of the groceries has fallen. As she's looking a little bit more, you know, intently at the groceries on the floor, she looks over to her left, and immediately we see that the dad does not sit down next to them in the driver's seat, but it is some random person. Immediately, I'm talking within the first, 2 minutes of this movie, we immediately get introduced to a kidnapping, okay? So she immediately looks over to the left and sees that it's some random dude, and it's very intense immediately. The other girls in the back are still on their phone, not even noticing anything. And then the spoiled girl, Claire, she goes, excuse me, sir, you're in the wrong car. And as she says that, he puts on a face mask, and he sprays them with chloroform. Crazy. But I would like to note that he sprays the two girls in the back with chloroform and doesn't spray Casey with chloroform right up in the front until Casey tries to escape out the door, and then he then proceeds to spray her with chloroform. So almost like he didn't even account for Casey. So obviously they wake up in, you guess it, a very dull but almost nicely dressed prison. They're all together. The two preppy girls, Claire and Maisha, are hugging each other, very frightened on the bed, while Casey wakes up alone on a separate bed. They're looking at her almost like she's an animal waking up. They're clearly not really friends, but they're in the situation together, so they're going to go ahead and talk. They look around. The bathroom is very clean, very neat. And the dungeon they're in is, you know, there's drywall, and then there's also brick. So it looks like they're in a basement, but it looks like it was kind of renovated to do a nice prison, to be a nice-ish prison. It's kind of spacious, whatever. So they're looking around. They're asking, what happened? Where's my dad? You know, Claire, the spoiled chick. Where's my dad? Whatever. And then as that happens, the guy who abducted them opens the door very quietly, very calmly, brings a chair in, unfolds the chair, takes out a yellow handkerchief, yes, important, yellow handkerchief, which he also had in the car that while abducting the girls, pulls out a yellow handkerchief and dusts off the seat before sitting down, immediately indicating that, yes, he has some severe OCD, especially if he can't sit down. So he looks around, stares at the girls. The girls don't say anything. He stares at the girls for like almost a solid 30 seconds to 1 minute. He points at Maisha, Claire's best friend, and says, "You first." And he grabs her and starts pulling her towards the door. Maisha escapes for like 2 seconds and like grabs Casey, our main character, and Casey whispers in Maisha's ear, "Pee yourself." She says, "Pee yourself." So we don't get to see what happens in the scene. We just hear. We're just essentially zooming into the door as he grabs Maisha and brings her outside of the dungeon. And we just hear her kind of like fumbling around and wrestling. And then like 30 seconds later, he busts in the door, back into the dungeon, drops her off, and he's like freaking out. His hand is like got pee on it. And he's like disgusted, this guy. And, you know, we pan to her and he says all he wanted to do was dance. He wanted me to dance for him. And then we notice that she peed herself and that's how she got away. Back into the dungeon. I mind you, not got away, but back into the dungeon. So now the girls are like, what do we do? It's immediate decision time. It's very important that we do something and we should fight back. We should all pool together and fight this guy. We just acted like cowards just then, but we should pool together and fight him. And as it happens, we also get these flashbacks to Casey at a very young age. We get Casey flashbacks. Maybe she's, I want to say, 6 or 7 years old. And they're flashbacks of her father and her uncle. So she immediately, we learn that these preppy girls and Casey don't get along. And these preppy girls are saying, we should fight him. Let's tag team him. Let's do it. And Casey essentially says, yo, I watched this guy carry your bodies like it was nothing. We would get knocked out with one punch. It's a bad idea. She literally says, shut up. I'll tell you when I believe that there's a good idea. So Casey immediately sets the tone that she hates these girls. They're preppy. They have never had to do a damn thing in their life. And we know that Casey's, you know, she's got some backstory yet to learn, but clearly there's some backstory. And these other girls really don't have backstory. They clearly grew up very wealthy, very happy, and are very, you know, pure of violence. They don't have to deal with violence. Apparently Casey has. So now we move to one of our other main characters, Dr. Fletcher. Old woman, I want to say around 70, 75. We see her walking up a spiral staircase as we listen to a voiceover, a VO of the breaking news. 3 young girls were abducted today. If you know anything about these whereabouts, blah, 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 blah. So a little foreshadow there, or maybe just getting characters to, you know, intertwine. As this happens, Dr. Fletcher, clearly a therapist of some type, gets an email from this guy named Barry S. Barry says, I need to see you now. Urgent. And she replies, okay. Okay, then we pan back right back to the dungeon. Back in the dungeon, and the girls are trying to plan a further escape, while Casey essentially tells them that they're idiots and you don't know what's going on. Then we get another pan back to Casey's flashback as an 8-year-old. She's hunting with her dad and her uncle. And we're clearly learning that, again, she's like 7 in this, and her dad is teaching her how to hunt. Like hunt a deer, how females and males are, you know, how females are smarter, you know, female deers are smarter. They can use their, you know, nose to smell danger, and males are just dumb. They, you know, go run off and go try to just mate all day. So we're learning that she's got some hunting background, clearly, you know, not just the average young girl. So then we pan to Dr. Fletcher. Dr. Fletcher is now talking with the abductor. His name is Barry, we learn, or at least one of his personalities is Barry, we learn. And Barry is a stylist. Barry is very clean very cool and slick and happy. Seems like a really chill dude. She's looking at the drawings and they're very, very impressive. He's honestly a very good artist and fashion guru. So she asked him, why did you email me? Why did you email me? Why was it urgent? What's going on? And Barry essentially just says, oh, that's nothing. I thought it was something, but it's no big deal. I got over it. I'll talk to you later. And she goes, what are you talking about? What? She's kind of confused. And she notices as Barry's walking around, he's looking for something or he's kind of fixing stuff up around the apartment, like kind of turning a bowl a little bit, almost like a little bit of OCD. So we already get a hint that Barry kind of is off or something. Something strange between the doctor and Barry. So Barry says, all right, doc, thanks so much. I'm going to go. I appreciate, you know, the chat. Almost like he didn't even really need to do the chat. And as he's leaving, she goes, oh, Barry, you forgot something. You forgot your drawings. You're usually very protective about these drawings. And Barry looks at her and he's like, oh yeah, I won't go anywhere with those. But he already kind of forgot about them. So clearly maybe it's not Barry in there. Maybe one of these personalities is kind of doing something else. Maybe it was one of the personalities that kidnapped the girls. We will come to learn more. So he leaves and we learn that the doctor, the therapist, Dr. Fletcher, she really has a niche patient group where she likes looking at and studying patients with DID, like multiple personality disorder, essentially. And she believes that these aren't just multiple personalities. She believes that these are people that can truly believe that there's someone else and it changes the DNA in their body. So she essentially tells her neighbor, because she hangs out with her neighbor every once in a while, that yes, I believe that these people can genuinely change their genetic DNA if they believe that there's someone else. I.e., if I'm blind, maybe one of my personalities isn't and I will be able to see, something like that. Or one personality has diabetes and one doesn't, something like that. We pan back to the girls all stuck in the dungeon. They're peeking through the there's like little crevices in the door and it looks like there's a woman. There's a woman in there talking to, we now learn, someone named Dennis. Dennis and Patricia. They're talking to each other back to back and they start screaming for help. They're like, help us, help us. And then she's like, oh, Dennis, what did you do? She walks in and who is it but the same guy? So clearly it's one dude with multiple personalities. We can't really tell if he's like just trying to mess with the girls or he's genuinely lost it. But if he's seeing a doctor, we assume he's got multiple personalities. So he walks in as Patricia, a girl, a woman who knows Dennis and kind of seems to be partners with Dennis, one of the other personalities, who, again, is strong and abducted the girls. And he is saying, I'm so sorry about Dennis's behavior. He promised me he'll never do it again. He'll treat you with respect. So we kind of like Patricia. She seems kind of nice. And he's getting on the good side of the girls. Then we go pan back to the therapist. And we pan back to the therapist because we see her avidly trying to tell the world that there's these people out there who almost have supernatural abilities, essentially, who've been able to activate their brains to change the DNA, like change their DNA because of this like trauma that happened to them at a young age. And she's trying to convince the world that they're more than just weirdos, but they're like actually above us, like they're better than us, stronger than us, and it's crazy. So then we go back, yes, back to the girls in the dungeon. Dennis opens the door. Dennis, the strong guy who, you know, abducted them. He walks in. He says, Patricia has told me that I need to apologize to you guys. I'm sorry. He walks in with a bottle of, with a bucket of cleaning supplies. And he tells them, this is the blue cap. You wash the bathroom with this one. You wash the floors with this cap. Please come here and wash this. Because clearly he has massive OCD. And he's trying to be nice. So it's still a little creepy, but the girls recognize that's what's happening, so they follow his orders and essentially clean the bathroom while he's watching, kind of creepily, but not that creepily, because Patricia's told him that, you know, he needs to be good. And I want to note that Dennis keeps seeing the dirtiness of clothes around, and he asks the girls to like remove their socks or shoes if it's too dirty, because clearly he's that significant OCD. So then the girls fall asleep. The girls then wake up, and we see another personality. This personality is Hedwig. We learn that he is a 9-year-old boy, very young, and he is essentially telling the girls that something bad's coming. Something bad is coming, and you guys are not going to like it. And so the girls are, like, freaked out. But Casey sees this as an opportunity to learn that this is a guy who has multiple personalities and that these personalities don't necessarily hear the same things that this person hears. So Casey, the smart main character actress who's gone through experience of stuff, apparently, she asks Hedwig, does anyone else hear this? And Dennis says, no, it's just me. Hedwig says, Mr. Dennis and Miss Patrice don't hear this. I have the ability to get into light anytime I want. That's what makes me special. And so we learn that this 9-year-old Hedwig essentially, quote unquote, has the ability to get the light. Get the light essentially means become this person, to push away the other personalities, and you get to become the personality. So there's like some kind of, and I like to think of it as there's 23 personalities in like an AA room. You know how, you know, in the AA rooms are always kind of poorly lit in this very weird gym. They're all sitting down in a circle. Every time one of them stands up, they get to take, quote unquote, the light. So Hedwig has the ability to take the light whenever he wants. Clearly, everyone else doesn't. So it's seeming like Hedwig is partnering up with Mr. Dennis and Miss Patrice for this greater thing, to have all things pure eaten by the thing that's coming. So as Casey, you know, starts learning more about what's going on, thanks to 9-year-old Hedwig, she plays a game with him and says, can I tell you something? And then he's very interested, as a 9-year-old he should be. She goes, this guy is coming for you. She goes and says this to Hedwig. This guy that you're talking about that's coming for us, he's actually coming for you. And so the 9-year-old Hedwig says, you're a big fibber, you're a liar. But Mr. Dennis told me that I'm safe, you know, and he followed these two girls for 4 days to make sure that they were the pure ones for the food, for the beast that's coming. And, you know, it's like very eerie, because now we're learning that clearly in the note that there's three of them. So, you know, and then Miss Patricia said that she's not mad at me anymore and I'm doing the right thing. So why would he be coming for me? And then he starts, you know, she asks him a little too many questions and he freaks out and he leaves. But we learn that somewhere in their line of conversation, Hedwig said that Mr. Dennis has been preparing the dungeon for a long time, making sure everything's safe. So once Hedwig leaves and the girls are just alone in the dungeon again, they say, Casey says, look for something that, you know, clearly the drywall is new. So maybe he was hiding something from us so that we wouldn't be able to escape. It's kind of funny because these three girls are just knocking on the walls thinking that they could hear something, which I find kind of strange. They didn't really communicate that with each other very well, but they all had the same plan apparently. And they knock around, and sure enough, Claire, the spoiled, one of the spoiled girls, finds a big metal doink. So she starts hitting it with her heel and rips up the drywall, and we get revealed that, boom, there is a vent, an air duct, a vent right above them. They're making a lot of noise, so Hedwig comes back, and he's like, guys, what's going on? Let me in. Stop playing. No games. And it's really intense, because if he sees the girls doing this, then shit gets crazy. So the girls barricade the door, and we notice that Hedwig is not strong enough to overpower the girls. Not strong enough to overpower the girls. So clearly, these personalities really do have their own types of strength. So as the girls are saying, like, I'm changing, don't come in, they're trying to trick Hedwig. Hedwig's like, I'm going to tell Dennis he's going to slap you. What are you doing? Stop it. You're, you know, whatever, whatever. And as this is happening, Hedwig leaves, and he goes to get Dennis, or himself, I guess, technically. And as that happens, Claire finds her way, crawls through the air duct. Dennis, as the moment Claire gets into the air duct, Dennis is there, and clearly pushes the girls from the door immediately, like it's like nothing now. So strength is real in one of these characters. Dennis is very upset and tells the girls to stay in the dungeon as he goes and looks for Claire. We see Claire running through some like weird piping, clearly a basement of some type, and we hear Dennis say, like, stop. Like, it's very intense. We get a chase scene, a horror chase scene. Claire looks left. She looks right. It's still straight away. She finally gets to this cubby where there's a bunch of lockers with, like, a bunch of weird names on them. And she goes into one of the lockers, and it's, like, the classic look through the little vents, you know, the eye slits to see what's going on. We see him run by, and then we see him stop and stare immediately at her, like that classic pop-up where the eyes go, like, right through there. And so Dennis doesn't even say anything. He just looks there and says, like, he breathes quiet, like, calmly, and he says, very calmly, he says, would you get out, please? Will you come out, please? It's not a nice please, but it's, like, a very angry, stern, just come out of there. You're trying to make us look dumb. And he says us a lot. They say us a lot because they're essentially a people. All of these 23 personalities are people. So Dennis says, get out now, please. Very calmly. She does so because clearly she's in a locker. She's not going to be able to do anything. So Dennis says, you shouldn't trick children. You tricked Hedwig, so what the fuck's wrong with you? And now he goes, and look at you. Your sweatshirt's all dirty. You're going to need to remove that. Again, Dennis is OCD. He's also a little of a creep, so she removes her jacket. Now she's just into a bra and a skirt. Dennis brings her back into a separate closet room and drills her in. So now Claire is separated from Casey and Maisha. She's sobbing alone, and yes. Dennis goes in and patches the hole in the dungeon where Casey and Maisha are there. And he essentially was like, don't do that again. And your clothes are filthy from all the dirt. Please remove your shirt and your skirt. So he's essentially stripping the girls down. But Casey has a lot of layers, and he's not telling her to remove all of them. He's just telling her to remove the dirty ones. So Casey's still in full clothes. We don't really see her skin in any way. But Maisha is down to just essentially, you know, underwear, and that's just about it. Then we pan back to the life of our therapist. She's got a meeting with, you know, Paris, still trying to convince the world that these people are supernatural, and, you know, she's trying to really make that a very prominent part of this. Then we get another email. We get another email from Barry S. We get another email from Barry S. to the therapist, and she agrees, yes, to meet with Barry. And as Barry's walking up the long spiral staircase, as we saw before, he puts away, yes, the yellow handkerchief, which symbolizes, folks, that is still Dennis. So Dennis is covering in Barry's eyes for some reason and trying to trick the therapist. But as a very special therapist, she recognizes and wants to essentially challenge that Barry is not there. And she wants to make an educated guess that she is talking to, yes, Dennis. And she wants to know why. She's very confused, and she wants to get Barry to admit that this actually Dennis. And so as she makes these guesses, Barry slowly starts to kind of fade away as we see, and she does seek out a little bit of Dennis, but he decides to leave right before Dennis comes out. He decides to leave, and in a panic at that, she almost had him admitting that it was Dennis instead of Barry. And so she wants to get confirmation that's Dennis. So she shows, she has like a video recording of trash spilt outside. And she sees a video of Dennis walk right through the trash. And she says, any normal person would walk around it. That is hate. So Dennis walked through the trash trying to, you know, show the anger of the OCD that he's trying to overcome, kind of thing. So yes, we kind of now know that, yes, Dennis is impersonating Barry. So it's kind of weird. So now Casey is just lying there on bed, almost looking like she's admitted defeat. And Maisha is like, again, not great friends, but she's like trying to talk to Casey, like, we got to look for a window, we got to look for a door, something. You know, it's just, you know, I want to note that these girls have all, I mean, they've got some good strategy ideas, but it just doesn't seem to be working out. There's doors that are locked in doors, they're in a basement, they can't really tell where they are. And we keep getting these, like, kind of fade cuts to, you know, flashbacks to Casey's, like, young, you know, seventh grade self, with her uncle and her father hunting with an animal. We see flashbacks of, you know, she looks at this deer dead, and, you know, it's going to be a big tradition with the father and all this. And we just, you know, clearly there's a story that we're going to find out near the end that's important. She wakes up, and Patricia is standing right over saying, you need to eat some meals. So her and Maisha go into the kitchen with Patricia, and they start eating, like, some sandwiches. So Patricia brings them out of the dungeon into the kitchen. Again, it's, like, very closed-off, basement-esque area. And they're eating sandwiches happily with, like, you know, Patricia, who's not a very physical threat in any way, shape, or form, but definitely seems like she's very much on Dennis's side. Like, she keeps saying that Dennis and I, like, they're almost like a couple or, you know, in cahoots with each other. As she's cutting the sandwich, she's cutting it with a knife, and I want to make that very apparent and very clear. And her back is turned while she's making the sandwich, and Maisha grabs the chair that she's sitting on and looks at Casey, and Casey goes like, no, no, do not try to do this right now. That's a terrible idea. But Maisha doesn't do anything. She doesn't listen, and she just rips the chair in the back of Miss Patricia's back. Absolutely just beams her. Just incapacitates her enough so she escapes through the door and she's running through the halls. And Patricia grabs the knife that she has and looks at Casey and says, go to your room right now. And Casey obeys. Casey listens to her and goes back to the dungeon. And Miss Patricia wanders around looking for Maisha, who's just trying to find a way out. And she can't. She finds a dead end. And Miss Patricia has a knife to her stomach, like face-to-face knife to the stomach, essentially saying that you are a pure person who has not undergone pain. You are the sacrifice that will be needed. Do not try to fight this. Blah, blah, blah. Essentially, they're like chosen. Clearly chosen. And so Dennis comes back, takes over the light from Patricia, and encloses Maisha into her own room. So we got Claire in her own room, Maisha in her own room, and Casey's in the dungeon in her own room. Dennis says, stop doing this. What are you guys doing? Blah, blah, blah. Then we go back to Casey's childhood again. Seven-year-old Casey, little Casey. Her dad is taking a nap. She's in the tent out hunting with her uncle and her dad again. And the uncle says, Casey, follow me. So we see Casey, young Casey, follow the uncle into the woods. Then Casey wakes up, and guess who is spooning her? Hedwig. Hedwig is spooning her, not in a sexual way, but just because he's saying, you lied to me, you jerk, you know. You made me scared, and, you know, you tricked me, and now Dennis and Patricia are mad at me, and I don't want that, you know, blah, blah, blah. So then they get up, they sit up, and they're looking at each other. She's not really scared, but she's on edge, and we keep hearing that Barry lost the power. Again, Barry was the one who was seeing the therapist, but Dennis clearly took over the power from Barry. So there's like a hierarchy of good personalities and bad personalities, and the bad personalities are taking over this body. And so they're talking, the Hedwig and Casey are talking, and Hedwig's like, can I kiss you? And Casey like looked a little freaked at first and then says yes. So they kiss. There's some comedy because, you know, it's weird, but it's not like a real kiss. Clearly it's, you know, really uncomfortable. And in the Hedwig looks at her and says, you might be pregnant. Very funny. Nice, well-needed, you know, humor. And then Hedwig feels a little more comfortable to tell Casey a little bit more about what's going on. And he says, you know, he's a big Kanye West fan and you should come listen to my records and CDs in my room. My CD player is right on the windowsill. And, I'll come show you sometime. And then Casey was like, holy fuck, yes, let's do that. She was like, yes, let me go with you right now. I'll be so excited. And then Hedwig stands up and goes, okay, yes, let's do it after whatever Dennis has planned for you tonight. So then he leaves, and then she's like, God damn it, I almost had it. So clearly something's happening sometime soon. Then we get another email. We get another email from Barry and back with the therapist. Barry's now back with the therapist, and the therapist is like, all right, no bullshitting. I'm getting this fucking right. So I'm getting Dennis to talk to me. So after like a bunch of berating and some really cool therapist talk, she gets Dennis to admit that he is the one there and not Barry. And she goes, why? She goes, and she learns that it's because one of the personalities keeps emailing her that they need help and they need saving. And so Dennis is essentially trying to cover their tracks by playing Barry's part. And then we learn that this is the first time Dennis and the therapist are meeting. So she's very excited and very, you know, excited to talk about the beast. And so she talks about Kevin also. So Kevin is the original person. Kevin is the body of all of these personalities. And so everyone wants to do what's best for Kevin. So the therapist is doing what's best for Kevin. Dennis believes he's doing what's best for Kevin. And he also believes in what's like this seemingly like 24th personality, which is like a god, like some crazy beast that is non-human, has leather for skin, crazy long nails, insanely muscular, super tall. And we learn this because the therapist is asking Dennis, what do you think the beast is? I can't believe you think it's real. You know, the human, you know, abilities can only go so far. You can't actually believe that this is real, Dennis. She's trying to, like, convince Dennis that what they're believing in, this beast, why they're holding these girls hostage so that way the beast can feed upon them, is just, like, he didn't divulge anything about the girls, by the way. I'm so sorry that I said that. Anyways, so we learn that Dennis is, like, not seen the beast yet, but he still believes in the beast. But looks like the therapist was able to get through to Dennis a little bit and possibly help in some type of way. Very intense scene. Also want to mention that the acting is freaking insane. Really, really, really great acting in this. Then we get Casey waking up again, and who else we get open the dungeon door but Hedwig. He says, come here, quick. So we get Casey gets to go follow Hedwig to the room, and we pass, like, Casey passes both girls in their separate rooms. They don't get to see Casey, but Casey gets to hear them, but she doesn't do anything about it. She goes into the room, excited to see the window, and he shows, you know, Casey the room, and it's a very childlike room. There's paintings everywhere, like little kid drawings everywhere. He immediately goes to the stereo, puts on some weird-ass rock music, like electronic music, and dances for like a whole minute as we get to like gander around the room. As it's almost kind of funny and kind of very weird, very cool cinematic angles, she's like, I thought you said that there was a window next to your CD player. And then he goes, there is. And then he shows her the picture that he drew of a window. And so she's like lost it now. She's like, I thought this was going to be my chance. And then Hedwig learns quickly that she was just trying to trick Hedwig so she could escape. And then she just starts freaking out on Hedwig, like grabbing him like a 9-year-old. And essentially saying, you got to help me escape. Please help me get out of here. You know, they're going to do bad things to me, blah, blah, blah. And so Hedwig is kind of confused. And then she realized and, like, starts crying and, like, pouting. And he says he's going to go get Dennis. So Casey immediately snaps and, like, oh, shit, I got to keep this facade with Hedwig or I'm screwed right now because I'm in his room. So she's like, let me see other stuff. Let me see what else you got. And, like, screaming at him, he, like, grabs this walkie-talkie. And he's like, check this out. And he's like, look what I stole from Dennis. He doesn't even know. And it's a real walkie-talkie, and it's working. And she does what you'd expect, and she turns the channel. She's like, no, don't worry, Hedwig. I'm just seeing if it's real. It's so cool. And then she turns to a channel where there's someone's like, hello? And then Hedwig's like, don't say anything. And then she does obviously what you'd expect and says, help me, help me, help me, blah, blah, blah. I'm here. Please help me. And then the person on the radio thinks it's a joke, as almost anyone would. Someone's like pranking the person. Like, she's like, my name is blank and blank. My name is Casey Cook. I am abducted. I'm stuck in a basement somewhere. Please send help. Please call the cops. I need help. Blah, blah, blah. And this whole time she's fighting a 9-year-old. So he's kind of like running around trying to hit her with a bat. But again, he's a 9-year-old in a, you know, old person's body, but a 9-year-old. And punches him in the face. And as she does that, it unleashes Patricia. Patricia, not a physical being, essentially takes the walkie from her very calmly, tells her to put her hands together, and leads her back into the dungeon. She sees a screw on the floor from all the craziness, grabs it on the way in, and pockets it. And Dennis walks in and says, the beast is a sentient creature. And we learn more about the beast and how they're all going to be great food for the people who haven't gone through a lot in this world, people who've just been given everything. The beast will feed upon them and all this craziness. And then we get another pan to Casey as a 7-year-old in the woods with her uncle and father. The father's taking a nap. She followed the uncle into the woods, and we see the uncle hiding behind a rock and says, "Casey, come here. Come on. Come over here. Let's play animals like we did before. Let's play animals like we did before." And then Casey doesn't go. And then he says, "Don't let me tell your dad that you're not obeying me." So then she follows him around the corner, and we see that he is naked, howling like a wolf, saying, "Come here and join me. You know animals don't have any clothes." So we learn that clearly this uncle has been molesting her, or I don't know. It's very uncomfortable and gross. And Casey has the opportunity to shoot him with a shotgun, pointing right at him when they're done with their crazy shit that's horrible, pointing the shotgun at him. And he, like, is scared at first and then takes the gun from young Casey, the uncle, and is very mad at her. But then Casey actually wakes up, you know, crying. We get a montage of her, like, crying in the dungeon, like, because we learn that she's gone through some horrible shit, and she's now going through another round of horrible shit. And then we pan to the computer of the therapist. And on this computer, it's essentially just a shit ton of emails saying, "We need you, we 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 need you," all in red, all from Barry S. So the therapist is like, okay, something's seriously wrong. Something's seriously wrong. So what does she do? She goes to Barry's house. She goes to the house to meet Barry, where Barry is about to leave somewhere. And it's actually Dennis. So technically it's Dennis. Dennis is about to leave somewhere, and the therapist runs into her, and she's like, "Dennis, Kevin is really lucky to have you, but something's wrong. I don't want you to get hurt. We believe that you're special. I believe that you guys are special." She keeps saying that you guys are special, and Dennis believes her. And because the therapist keeps saying how special they are, again, that's what they want. They want to feel special, not like, you know, outsiders, all of these personalities. The therapist convinces Dennis to go back inside with her and have a chat and talk more about, you know, the beast and talk more about the beliefs and all this. So she's inside, she's observing everything, and we learn that Kevin, the person that all these characters are, you know, his mother beat the shit out of him, his father left, he clearly had some horrible moments. And we learn that the therapist threatened Dennis to bring Kevin back at any time she wants by just saying his full name. So at any moment, she could bring Kevin back by just saying the full name. So Dennis is happy that she's there, and they get really deep and go true therapy about how we believe the beast is real. And then Dennis gets so happy, he's like, "I want to tell you something, Dr. Fletcher. I was not being completely honest with you. When you asked if I had seen the beast before, I said no, but I have seen the beast." And then he describes the beast, and it's just this big, hairy, muscular, big-fingered, you know, unpenetrable being, non-human being. And then the therapist is like, "So you actually have met the 24th personality, and it's real." And she's like, pretty freaked out, but she keeps on a facade at this point. She doesn't want to show Dennis any fear. So she goes, and Dennis mentioned that the beast feeds upon the pure of women. And this, now she, the therapist, is putting together that maybe there is a tiny chance that those girls that I saw on the TV got abducted by Dennis for this beast. But she wants to put on a mask so that way she doesn't get caught or, you know, let on. So she says, "Dennis, I'm so happy that we're doing this. Let's schedule a time tomorrow so I can keep my notes. Is there any way I could use your powder room?" So she, you know, shoves some thing in the napkin in the door just in case, you know, there are girls that are locked somewhere. She decides to fake go to the bathroom and open one of the locked doors. And as she does it, she sees, yes, Claire in a bra, passed out on the floor. Claire opens her eyes and says, "Are you real?" to doctor, like the therapist. And the therapist is just appalled. She's just like, "Holy shit, I can't believe this is real. Oh my God, I can't believe it." And as that's happening, we see Dennis pop up behind her, slam the door on the Claire's face before she escapes. And then the therapist is talking to Dennis now, essentially saying, "This is so unbelievably wrong. You cannot be doing this. She's no longer a therapist, but she's more of just a woman trying to save girls, just being like, you can't do this, Dennis. Please free these people. You're a better person than this. And then Dennis says, I'm sad you think this way. Sprays her with chloroform and now has abducted her. Now we pan to Claire in that secret room. This is the rich girl. She and the other rich girl are talking room to room through the vents, and they're panicking to look for something to break out of, because now she's heard that it was a latch lock. It was a lever lock, so you could pick those pretty easy from the outside. So she finds a hanger, and we get a little montage of them trying to pick it. And as we get a montage of them trying to pick it, we see that Dennis has left the house, and Patricia is also with Dennis at the same time, outside of the house, in the city, enjoying themselves, going down to the subway. As that happens, we see the therapist slowly start waking up. We see Claire using the screw, and we see Claire using the hanger to try to escape. We see Casey using the screw she grabbed on the floor, digging away at the, you know, the wall, trying to break through the doors. She breaks through the first door. Casey breaks through the first door through the dungeon, and now there's a second door. It's like a almost like a laundry room she's got to break through. And in there, there's a computer that she sees a bunch of files. She sees 23 files, and they're all video files of each one of the personalities. So Casey immediately learns that all of these personalities are very different, and we learn that Barry has kind of been pushed aside, and the light is now kind of pushed to the villain areas. And so all those things that we were thinking about actually are happening, and it's not good. Then we pan to the subway, where we see Dennis just all of a sudden go shirtless and just start turning into like that of the Hulk. So the Beast is now awakened. The Beast is awakened in the subway, and he's running around like a Captain America villain, essentially. Very veiny, very, very intense, very beast-esque. Like crawling on the ceiling, crawling on the walls. Very intense. As that's happening, the therapist is trying to recoup her consciousness, and we see everyone just trying to get to it, like try to escape, essentially. The hanger is just about to break through the picket lock, like they're just about to escape there. The therapist is moving, and Casey is just about breaking down the last door with like some big hammer. And we see the therapist grab a pencil. Instead of escape, she grabs a pencil and paper, very drunkenly, almost like high from chloroform or whatever. Write something down. We don't see what. Then she grabs the knife from the kitchen. And then as she stands up and finally slowly start gains consciousness, we see for the first time in truly real person, the Beast. Very veiny, very insane, very crazy. And the therapist gets grabbed. She tries to stab him, and the knife breaks in half like it's like cheap plastic or something. And the Beast grabs her and just squeezes her from the midsection, lifts her off the floor, and just essentially severs her spine from her body by squeezing her so goddamn hard. Casey watches another video on the computer because she's like given up. She's given up on trying to break out, so she's looking at all of the videos on the computer, and she notices that there's a spare set of keys behind her, hidden underneath like this hat. She finds that she grabs the keys, she breaks out, and we see like one of the doors had opened. Like we're thinking maybe Claire had escaped and used the hanger to escape. And as she's looking around, she sees Myesha, her stomach is wide open, almost like a zombie had ripped inside of her. So clearly the Beast had gotten to her, and her stomach is just ripped open. So she goes to Claire's, and Claire is still alive, and she's looking kind of, you know, iffy. And she goes, Claire, let's go. Let's get out of here. And then the moment Claire looks up, we get the classic horror pull, and the Beast is eating her legs and pulls her out of the shot like a horror movie. And we see him just chowing. We see the Beast just chowing down on Claire's body. And Casey walks in to see it all happen. The Beast doesn't see Casey. Just like a zombie, she like very into eating the pure bodies. So now we get Casey versus the Beast. So she sees the doctor, the therapist is dead. Her two female friends are dead. And she locks the Beast in the room that Claire was in, because that's where the Beast was eating Claire, in the room. So she locks it enough in the room long enough where she can run and just try to find an escape route. She has some keys, but she's looking for anything. And as she's looking around, she sees the paper that says, "Call him by his full name, Kevin Wydell Crum." And that's what the therapist had written down. And as she reads it, she looks to her left in the slow motion, and she sees the Beast crawling on the wall, crawling on the ceiling, and she screams, "Kevin Wydell Crum, Kevin Wydell Crum." And as that happens, it's almost like all the personalities are fighting each other to try to, like, stay alive. So it's clearly working, and as it works, we see the Beast, like, slowly calm down, and we go to the inside of the head of Kevin Wydell Crum, Wydell Crum, and we see his mom just screaming at him, "Kevin Wydell Crum, you come out here, you made a mess." And she's got, like, a hanger, like, picking at his skin, like, really torturing the hell out of him. So we can see how that's how he got his trauma. And then we get a pan to him, like, turning out of the Beast into Kevin. He goes, "Who are you? What's going on? Who's dead on my floor? What is this? Is this not September 14th, 2014? And then we learn that he's been, like, out, and he's been in the dark for, like, years. And so he's like, "I have a gun, a shotgun, in that closet. The shells are in the lockers down the hall. Grab them and shoot me right now. Grab them and shoot me." And then as he says that, all the personalities start popping out, like a montage of the personalities, good and bad, good and bad. Don't want to die. So they're like telling Casey, like, don't kill us. Do this. And then Dennis shows up and he's like, "I told you he was insane," or whatever. "Like, I told you the Beast is real. I told you it's real." And Hedwig then shows up and goes, "You shouldn't have done that with the walkie-talkie. Now the Beast is really mad, blah, blah, blah." And so now the Beast starts showing up, and the Beast takes a little bit to conjure, clearly. So it's like the Hulk. It takes a little bit to conjure. So she grabs the shotgun, no shells, out while the Beast is forming, running down the same corridor that Claire ran down a while ago and found the lockers that she hid in. And instead of hiding in the lockers, she looks around and sees Crum as one of the locker labels. So she knows that the shotgun shells are in there. She grabs the shotgun shells, she grabs the shotgun, and she's sprinting, trying to find an exit in some way. And in doing so, she finds essentially a dead end. And as she's trying to, like, she goes through one extra door, we get the classic, hand on ankle grab, pulls her, and chewing sounds. So the Beast is chewing on her calf and, like, ripping her shirt up and ripping her body, like, trying to eat her stomach. And she pulls a shell and pops a shot, and then he disappears. So then he disappears, and she's trying to escape. She's hobbling because her leg was just chewed. She goes to the very dead end, all the way into the corner, into, like, this jail cell, essentially. And she's got the shotgun shells loaded in the gun. She's locked in the jail cell. And we get that last pan back to young Casey at 7 years old. Her father is dead. And her new guardian is her uncle, the one who molests her. And she has nothing to do. And the last thing in that montage, the uncle says is, "You won't be any trouble for me now, will you?" And then we learn immediately that she has just grown up with this uncle who molests her and, like, tortures her, and it's horrible. So then we pan back to real life and what's going on. And she sees the Beast down the hall. And it's far down the hall, so she's not going to shoot the shotgun yet. And the Beast climbs on the ceiling and starts ripping out the light bulbs in the ceiling so that way she can't see him. And we get, like, flashes of him running back and forth, left and right, not towards her, but, like, left, back and right, so she can't shoot him. As it's happening, the Beast is talking about purity and how he's going to eat he's going to eat and show the world that the rightful people that belong in this world are the ones who have been, abused, are the ones who's gone through trauma and craziness. And so as he's doing that, we get a pop-up, and he runs right at her, and she pops two shells into his body. Bam, bam, pops two shells right into his body, and it affects him. He lays down on the floor like he's got stomach cramps, and then he stands up, and you see that it affected his body, but it didn't really, it didn't kill him. He's bleeding, but, you know, I mean, he's not immune to bullets, definitely not, but he's bleeding, he's affected, but he's definitely alive, and it should have definitely killed him. So she's locked herself in a jail cell. Super creepy images of his bleeding, like, mouth and face, and he goes to the bars and starts pulling them apart like an absolute maniac, like a crazy strong, insane guy. And as he's doing it, he looks down at her body, at her stomach, at her shoulders, and there's scars everywhere upon her body, on Casey's body. And he looks at her, laughs, and says, "You understand, we can rejoice together." And then he leaves. And then he leaves, and that's essentially the peak climax. Then we get, you know, the conclusion of the film. We learn that she had been underneath a zoo animal storage area, or a zoo just in general, this whole time. Hence the cage, hence the basements, you know, all this makes sense. And someone comes and finds her down there, and she's being escorted. And the person that she radioed calls 911, and, like, clearly you see that he, like, fucked up because he should have called police a long time ago. Then the police show up. We learn that all the therapists and the two girls are dead. The father is alive, and he was not abducted. And the cops are looking around and realizing that this is definitely, like, there's 23 toothbrushes, there's 23 rooms, there's, like, they all have their own personalities. And the cop tells her that her guardian is here to pick her up. And then Casey looks at the cop with tears in her eyes and doesn't move. And then we learn that, you know, her uncle is still abusing her and she doesn't want to go home to her uncle. So we don't see her leave the cop car. We don't see Casey leave the cop car to her uncle. But we do pan to Dennis, Hedwig, and Patricia, and the Beast in this, like, broken down house, looking in the mirror, essentially saying, "They have to believe us now. We are going to show the world what we are, that we exist." And it's essentially a big setup for this big cliffhanger. And then an even bigger cliffhanger for a next movie, clearly, is that we get a newscast going on in a diner, and we learn that we can't call Kevin, because there's too many personalities, so the news is calling it the Horde, and the Horde has escaped, and someone essentially says, "Whoa, this sounds really familiar to another case. What was that case?" And then we have a famous actor, I'll divulge later after we watch the second movie, say, "Mr. Glass." And as he says "Mr. Glass," we get end credits. So that is the movie Split. Very crazy, very intense. Got a 72 on Rotten Tomatoes. I can see why, but I also want to give way more credit to the actors on this. This is Queen's Gambit, lead role. Very amazing actress there. And we got Professor X in X-Men, the young Professor X. A very talented actor there for the 23 personalities, 24 personalities, actually. Very talented acting. Very unique way to do some scoring. Very intense. No real melodies, no real themes necessarily, just intense music. I thought the cinematography was unbelievable. The lighting was really amazing. Even though they were in essentially a jail cell and, like, a basement the whole time, it was able to change in a very tasteful way throughout the movie. And I thought that was really awesome. The three storylines that we were listening to, the young Casey, the therapist, and, you know, the girls and, you know, in the basement scenes and all of that, it was a really nice relief from the intensity of the basement scenes, and a really cool way to essentially say, this is a mystery, and you, the audience, are going to have to put this together before we give it to you at the very end of the movie. I thought that was really cool. I think it was also pretty obvious that, you know, clearly they hadn't addressed the fact that Casey was abused versus the other two girls that were pure of abuse. Like, it was obvious that the beast wanted to feed on the pure, and so it just made sense that we would learn that Casey was abused, so she was going to be safe from the beast, I felt like, at least. It seemed that way. I really liked the fact that the therapist was a big part of this, and the fact that she really, really helped all of those 23 personalities, like, viciously, to the point where she almost helped make the beast, essentially, by, like, fueling each one of their fires and helping them become stronger and stronger. And then her death, no one's really going to be able to explain all of her research except for inside of her notes. So I'd be interested to see what the next movie's about. But that's my time today, everybody. Thanks so much for listening. Do watch this with light on if you do end up watching it. But please feel free to leave a comment, email me, or message me in any way. Give me a call if you know who I am. I'm happy to answer anytime. Thanks again for watching. This is Flick Fix. I'm Leonard Cox, your host, and please do enjoy the rest of your day.
He summarizes his movies so that way you don't have to go pay for them or go to the movies, and you can just listen to them in your car with your downtime. Flick Fix.